for the talk for this evening. Many of you don't realise this, some of you do, but many of you don't, how much I do during the week. So just last weekend, after finishing off the five-night talk, Saturday gala dinner, Sunday stuff, on Sunday afternoon I went to Brisbane to do some talks over in Brisbane, came back on Wednesday afternoon. So I look after the whole of Australia. Well, one of the things which happened over there, one of the remarkable, wonderful events was Tuesday. Tuesday lunch, one of the people serving me lunch, their son came up to me and told me, can I please help his father? Because this young man's elder brother had fallen out with his father. And the father hadn't talked to his elder brother for 3 years. And the elder brother hadn't talked to his father for 3 years. And they were in their 20s, quite young. Something had happened. And because the whole family respected me, I used my influence to get everybody to come to my talk that evening, last Tuesday evening in Brisbane, in Griffith University. At the end of the talk, I ordered the father and the estranged son to come up and look at each other and forgive one another and start talking again and give each other a hug. And it was a very wonderful thing which I was very proud of all the achievements last week. That was one of the best. The father and son who hadn't talked together for 3 years. Because something, I don't know who did what, basically I don't care who did what, that's in the past. And so that was very, reminded me of the power of forgiveness and reconciliation, which is the subject of this talk this evening. But first of all, to have that forgiveness and reconciliation, there's no way that you can find that if you keep digging over the stuff of the past and try and find out who was at fault and who did what, because you can never have reconciliation that way. We all have different ideas of who was at fault and who was right, who was hurt and who was not hurt, but everybody gets hurt, when there is a father and son, or two lovers or two friends split apart. And so I told them that there is something which we have in the Buddhist monastic code called literally covering over with grass. They say if something has happened in the past between two people, and then don't try and dig it up again. Don't try and just have a trial once again to decide who was right and who was wrong. Because it's quite clear, I am right and you are wrong. And there's no end there. There can never be any reconciliation, any forgiveness, any letting go of the past. So it always has to have, I think you were wrong, I think I was right, and I know that's how you feel as well. Let's actually just totally let that go and bury it. Just like, a shit of the past, you bury it underground. And you cover it with earth, and soon the grass grows, and whatever was underneath there just melts into the soil, it disappears, and you never know it was ever there. It's called covering over with grass. And it's a wonderful way to let go of whatever happened in the past. Because otherwise, without reconciliation, without people coming together, there's always this terrible suffering of separation, the suffering of apartness, the suffering that there's some unfinished business which you'd really hope would one day be completed, and that people who were friends can be friends again. People who respected one another can respect one another again. And divided houses can actually come together again. I remember looking at the mother and just seeing just her joy, seeing two people she loved very much, her husband and her son, hug together. And just the joy of a mother seeing that was just worthwhile, just all that trip to the other side of Australia. And reconciliation is beautiful. It is something which is inspiring. It gives us hope for our world. And the only way it can be done is again by covering over with grass. And it's because of that that very often we have forgiveness ceremonies in Buddhism, and we do this so often. If ever you come to any of our ceremonies, we're always asking forgiveness of each other. It's not that we always do bad things to each other. It's just a beautiful ceremony, which basically we overdo, I must admit. But nevertheless, it's not, you can't really overdo a good thing. And so because of that, I've mentioned a few weeks ago, all of you who have a relationship, especially those of you who are married, on the anniversary of your marriage, or if you're just not married yet, the anniversary when you met, any special day of the year, please do a forgiveness ceremony together. And this is so important that very often when I do marriage ceremonies, this is actually one of the things I impress upon that couple. The day of your marriage, remember this anniversary, and every year of that marriage, you offer a gift to each other, a token. It does not matter what it is. And it doesn't matter who starts. One of you say to your partner, "Darling, if there's anything I have done in the past 12 months, by body, by speech, or by mind, even thoughts, intentional or unintentional, because many of the things which hurt us were not meant, they weren't deliberate. We're just human beings, we say the wrong things, we do the wrong things. And most of the things which I've done which hurt other people, I didn't mean to. But it happens. So intentional or unintentional, anything I've done which has hurt you by body, speech or mind, or anything I didn't do or say which I should have done, which hurt or irritated you, I'm sorry. I ask your forgiveness. Please forgive me." And I think you understand this because you're all looking at me intently. In spirituality, especially in Buddhism, when anybody asks forgiveness, it's imperative. You have to give that forgiveness. Even if you have to bite your teeth because it's such a beautiful high thing to do, you have to sacrifice your ego, sacrifice your thing of justice and who's right and who's wrong, and give that forgiveness. Say, "Yes, I forgive you." And then it's your turn to do the same. It has to go both ways. If someone asks forgiveness, they say, "It's about time. I've been waiting for you for a long time to do this." And that's really low. And that's awful. That's pride and ego again. No, you also, even if you haven't done anything wrong, you don't know what you've done wrong. That's part of life, isn't it? You know, we've always done something wrong. We haven't quite figured it out yet, what we've done wrong, because someone's upset at us. What did I do? I don't know. But nevertheless, the other person also does the same. You've just given forgiveness to somebody and you ask it as well. If there's anything I've done by body, speech or mind, intentional or unintentional, which has hurt you or irritated you or given you a hard time or things I didn't do which I should have done, I'm sorry. Please forgive me. So you know you're my partner, my friend, my lover. Please forgive me. And you do give that forgiveness. Not only is it a beautiful act of spirituality, because you know sometimes people think that being a Buddhist, being a spiritual person is all about coming to listen to a talk. It's nothing to do with listening to a talk. It's what you do, how you behave in your life. And these beautiful high acts of forgiveness, letting go, which really make you a sort of a beautiful, happy person who loves conciliation, who loves harmony, and always understands that disharmony is just a cancer which grows inside of us and stops us knowing what real love and conciliation truly is. And so we forgive each other. So at least once a year, if not more often, you know, you wipe the slate clean. You don't keep carrying around with you all this pain of the past, which is there. And if you could do that, not only would you have a happier family, you'd also be able to teach your children and friends one of the great secrets of being able to live with another person. Forgiveness. because reconciliation, being able to live together, is much more important. Now, I have said that before, and I remind you to keep practicing that. But even more than that, the most important person you ever live with, of course, is yourself. And so do that forgiveness ceremony to yourself, whatever I have done in the past, by body, speech or mind, intentional or unintentional, or things I didn't do which I should have done, which I'm embarrassed about, which I'm ashamed of, which I really wish I hadn't have done. All of that, please, I give myself forgiveness. We can let it go. So you can have reconciliation with yourself. Because when I saw that father and son reconciled after 3 years of not even speaking to each other, I realized that's just like every human being. Sometimes it's part of ourselves which we don't speak to. Parts of ourselves which have been separated. The dark side, the shadow side of ourselves, which we really need to forgive, so we can reconcile with ourselves, reconcile with our past, be at peace with everything we've done. And of course, you notice how wonderful that can be. The sense of, at last, I can be at ease with my history. I can be feel this great sense of freedom. When there's no reconciliation, there's business to be done. When there is that reconciliation, the business is finished, and now we can go on to have a happy, joyful, loving life. But any of you who have actually asked forgiveness of me, just as a ceremony, you may know because I'm a cheeky monk and because I always like to innovate and do things which no one else does, you know, just for fun, because it can be very boring being a monk. So I innovate and do weird stuff. So one of the things I did to innovate, when somebody asks for forgiveness, I always tell them, I give you forgiveness in the three time zones. I give you forgiveness to everything you've ever done in the past, by body, speech or mind, intentional or unintentional, things you didn't do which you should have done. I forgive you for that. But I also forgive you for what you're doing right now. And I also forgive you for what you'll ever do in the future. You've got a blank check. You're already pre-forgiven, so do whatever you like. Now that sounds funny, but it actually is incredibly profound to be able to forgive the future. It's a great sense of letting go of anxiety and fear and negativity to whatever's going to happen to you. I call that forgiving the future. So you actually say to the future, your future, whatever it turns out like, you know, good, bad, sort of intentional or unintentional, it all goes wrong, I forgive you. Which means that you reconcile with your future instead of being in conflict with the future, which is what anxiety and fear truly are. And once you're anxious and fearful of the future, you can't relax and enjoy the future. How many times that if you're afraid, it makes you tense, it makes you worried, so you can't enjoy yourself. And a lot of times because of fear and anxiety, now that's, I've often said, this is a cause of controlling and being this control freak, getting stressed out, rather than just letting things evolve, you'll find that you'll get tense, you'll get sick, and you won't be able to live with other people, you won't even be able to live with yourself. You become the control freak, just so tense, so afraid. The opposite of that is just forgiving the future. Just letting the future be. So you can tell your future, whatever you turn out like, I already forgive you. I can reconcile with you. I can be at peace with you. Just like the father and the son could hug, you and your future can embrace and be at peace with one another, no matter what your future turns out to be. Remember, it's covering over with grass. It's like you cover the future over with grass. Whatever it is, it all works out in the end, some way or other. You always find that whatever happens to you in life, at the time it may seem, you know, uncomfortable, painful, disturbing, destructive. Some of the stuff we go through at the time, it does really feel that this is so bad. How can you accept or forgive this? But you've all had those experiences which have been devastating for you. But you know, you go past that 6 months, a year, 2 years, 10 years later on, it's all gone. And you look back, and so many people look back upon the disasters of their past, and they look back and say, if that never happened, I wouldn't be who I was. They even have gratitude towards the painful, disastrous experiences we all have to go through life. At the time, you can't see that. But when you look in your past and all the difficult times you've had, how much have you learned from that? How much have you grown? How much have you developed? When I see those terrible experiences I've been through in the past, I couldn't say thank you at the time, but now I can say thank you. That had a meaning. I wouldn't be who I was if that hadn't have happened. So this is actually how we can reconcile with the difficulties and with the fear of the future. And also we have forgiveness to the present moment, which is, I think, most important of all the three forgiveness. In this present moment, are you forgiving this moment? Allowing it to be and saying, this moment, no matter what you are, I'm at peace with you. You can reconcile with this moment, which is where your life actually exists. When we don't reconcile with this present moment, when we don't forgive it, we have a problem with it. You're too tired, you're too energetic, you're too sick, you're too this and too that. That's actually trying to be angry at yourself, or angry at this moment, angry at life. Can't you forgive this life for what it is and reconcile with this moment? You can reconcile with this moment. It is very much like you're hugging this moment. This moment and you become the best friends. I often notice that people think they are, the control freaks. They're masters and mistresses. And your body and mind is like a slave, like a servant to be ordered around. And you know what it's like in work, in your office, in your workplace when you meet things like that? You meet this boss who's always telling you what to do, always ordering you around. Is that a very beautiful place to live? Is that a happy office? And is that a very productive environment when you're always being forced to do things? I always know whenever I'm forced, I can never compete or never can produce to my best of ability when it's forced. When it's relaxed, then I can actually produce. Even whenever I do any writing, if it's forced, if I push it, it's terrible stuff. But if I relax and start to enjoy myself, then you always have very, very good results. Even giving a talk, I never push myself to give a talk, never even try and control it. I never have notes, I never have PowerPoints, because I just want these talks just to flow, to go naturally, so I can enjoy it and you can enjoy it, and that's when it gets to a very, very high quality. So I don't force the present moment. I forgive it. Whatever this moment is, the door of my heart's open to it. And because of that is a sense of reconciliation. And when you can do that, you find not only are you not fighting yourself, but you're also becoming at peace with yourself. And you're understanding an important part of Buddhism, a saying, which I always describe as the essence of Buddhism in one sentence. And that is, suffering is asking from the world what it can never give you. And so, instead of asking from this moment what it can never give you, instead of asking from the future what it can never give you, instead of asking from the past what it can't give you, you understand what the past is and how much it can give, what the present is, what the future is, what your partner, what your boss, what life can give you. You don't ask more than that. I call that, because this goes against what most people teach you, I call that lowering your expectations. Because we have so much high expectations of one another. We have a lot of high expectations of the past, the future and the present too. But let's start high expectations of the people you live with. Oh, come on. The person you live with is just like you. They're faulty. There's something wrong with them. There's an old story. This is an old story, I'm going to say, an old anecdote. There was once a very wealthy person who lived in Sydney. Not only were they very wealthy, they got a double degree, one from Cambridge and one from Harvard. They were wealthy and they also played, you know, in the AFL. They were really tall, good-looking, strong. He was such a perfect man, so he thought, that he wanted to marry the perfect woman. So he looked all around Sydney and he found this drop-dead gorgeous girl. He went out with her for a few times, but he decided that he couldn't marry her because she couldn't cook. So then he went to Brisbane. And there he saw an even more beautiful girl. And she owned her own restaurant. He went out with her looking for the perfect woman. He went out with her for 2 or 3 weeks. And then he dumped her too. Because yes, she was beautiful. Yes, she could cook, but she was stupid. Now, had hardly any education, so couldn't have a good conversation with her. So at last he came to the place he should have started, Perth, where he found the most beautiful women in the whole world. And he went out with one of them and she owned 3 restaurants. And not only that, she also had degrees from Oxford and from Princeton. But he couldn't marry her either. Even though she was perfect in every respect, he couldn't marry her because she was looking for the perfect man. this is the trouble with it. We always want other people, to be perfect. But are we perfect ourselves? The other story, which is funny, which is a true story, was told me by a lady over in Singapore, and I wrote this in Open the Door of Your Heart No. 1. She had just got married, and her husband told her this. Her father took his new son-in-law aside to give him some advice. You are my new son-in-law, you just married my daughter, and I'm sure you love her very much. And he went on just to say how much he loved her, how charming she was. Everything she did was just so lovable. Even the way she picked her nose was so charming. And the father said, that's what it's like when you're in love. Everything about the person you love is beautiful, wonderful. But, said the father-in-law, in 2 or 3 years, you'll begin to see the faults and defects in my daughter. That's what happens after 2 or 3 years marriage. You start to see the defects in your partner. But the father-in-law said, son-in-law, please remember this. When you start to see my daughter's defects, please remember, if she never had those faults and defects to begin with, she'd have married someone much better than you. He actually said that. Well, there's so much truth in that. Because we all do have our faults and defects, every one of us. And so that when we lower our expectations, we don't expect our partners to be perfect. We don't expect our boyfriends, our girlfriends, our husbands, our wives. We don't expect our kids to be perfect. Now, half of all children are below average intelligence. Come on, it's obvious. I keep saying that. But you think, no, not my children. My children are above average intelligence. So lower your expectations to what life can give. And then you find you're at peace, you're reconciling with life. And so much suffering, whether it's in a marriage, whether it's in work, so much expectations of what a boss should be, what a worker should be. You have so much expectations of what a Buddhist monk should be, or what the Buddhist society should be. So much expectations, but totally unrealistic. Life cannot give you that. And so we forgive life for not being perfect. We forgive our partner, for not being the most beautiful woman in the whole world who's a perfect cook and intelligent and always willing to do our every command. You can't find a person like that. Because of that, you lower your expectations. And then you'll find you can be at peace with life. You can reconcile with life. As I told that father and son, please, son, lower your expectations of what you think a father should be. You know, when you're a child, your mother and father are like gods. You think they know everything and can protect everything. You think they're such good, such moral paragons of virtue. But they're not. They're human beings. And sometimes they make mistakes, just like I make mistakes, just like you make mistakes. So if you want to reconcile with a parent, lower your expectations first of all. And then you can love them. And if you want to reconcile with your child who's disappointed you, please lower your expectations. They're a child, they're doing their best, they're not perfect. As no one is, as you're not perfect. If after a few years you see the faults and defects in your children, remember, if they didn't have those faults and defects to begin with, they wouldn't have been born with a parent like you. It's exactly the same. So when we lower our expectations, then forgiveness becomes possible. And when the forgiveness becomes possible, all we're really doing, we're having the wisdom to know, welcome to life. People aren't perfect, they do silly things, they make mistakes. So let's adjust our wants and desires to fit the way the world is, rather than trying to force this world to fit the way we think it should be. I always call that the essence of war. War is, this is its essence, is a war which tries to make the world fit into the way we want it to be. And the way of peace is changing the way we want things to be to fit into the way the world is. That's peace. So, lowering our expectations is changing our wants to fit into the reality of life. It is forgiveness, it is reconciliation, it is a path of peace. So we take away our expectations of the past, lower them, and then we can actually forgive, and we can reconcile, which means past, whatever you've done, body, speech or mind, I forgive you. I don't try and change you. I don't try and find what was right, what was wrong. I'm going to cover the whole thing with grass so it can disappear. And again, covering with grass has this other wonderful attribute. Something beautiful comes out of it. Even though it was really rotten stuff, you know, the dung, the shit, beautiful grass comes afterwards. And that's the same with the future. I'm not going to ask from the future what it can never give me. A lot of times we hope for the impossible. Sometimes it's nice to dream. Sometimes it's nice to work hard. But please lower your expectations, because too many people, they do fail in life and they get depressed, they get angry because they ask from the future what it can never ever give you. So lower your expectations of the future. And then you find you can actually be happy and peaceful. You don't expect so much. And if you're wrong, you've lowered your expectations too far, the future is surprisingly better than you ever expected. What a wonderful thing to do. And you know that's a saying of lowering your expectations. And a few people, they go on the internet and they found out that that is also on Harvard Business School blog, Advice for Companies in Our Modern World. And they did notice that many big businesses, people like Lehman Brothers, they went bankrupt because their expectations were far too big, far too greater than the economy could actually give them. Please lower your expectations also of the politicians who run this country. I know that's a hard thing to do because your expectations are already pretty low. But if you lower them a bit further, maybe you may be pleasantly surprised. Because that's the way the politicians are. That's the breed. That's the job. It's just a difficult job to do. And I don't know. I don't know why anyone would want to be a politician. But nevertheless, we do need them. So lower one's expectations is part of Harvard Business School blog for advice for companies to be successful. So don't ask from the market what it can never give you. That's why sometimes people, they invest, and they're unrealistic. There's no way that, you know, you think that you can beat the system, that you're smarter than everybody else, that somehow or other that you can succeed when most people don't. It's amazing, the conceit of the human being who thinks that they're smarter than the rest. As for me, I'm just not smarter than the rest, I'm not dumber than the rest, I'm part of the rest. And that way that you can reconcile, lower your expectations, make peace, forgive, and have a much more happier life. You're reconciling. The whole idea of reconciling means being one with things. And being apart is called suffering. So that's why that was a wonderful symbol of a father and a son who hadn't spoken to each other for 3 years. That was suffering. And coming together, that was peace, that was harmony, that was happiness. It was symbolic. And that's also just my method of meditation, what makes me very peaceful. Whatever I'm experiencing right now, I try and reconcile with it. I don't try and change it. I never ask from my mind something it can never give me. I'm at peace with it. It's a wonderful thing. That idea of forgiveness and reconciliation, the oneness which happens from reconciliation, it doesn't mean your son has to be perfect before you reconcile with them. Or your father has to be perfect. You don't even have to find out who was wrong. No, don't go there. Reconcile, cover over with grass. Who was right, who was wrong, who cares? Reconciliation is more important. So the past, don't care if I was right or I was wrong, trying to figure out, you know, who's to blame. No, put that aside. There's far too much blaming in this world. Somebody offered me this book a few days ago over in Brisbane. How was that one by Anita Mukherjee or something about her past life experience? And they were reading it. I don't have time to read these things these days. But anyway, somewhere in there she said something. She spent her whole life trying to apologize for things. But she didn't quite understand what she had to apologize for, but she apologized anyway. A lot of our life we spend saying sorry. We're not quite sure what we've done. We must have done something wrong because people are upset and angry at us, so we say sorry anyway. And this is our life. Instead of always saying sorry and apologizing for things, how about just covering over with grass and letting it go? Isn't it beautiful when we do that? We're free. Isn't it, instead of trying to say sorry for this moment, I apologize, my mobile phone went off during the meditation. They say, it'll go off every week. You know, I'm not angry. I've lowered my expectations. Doesn't matter if I say, turn your phone, no one ever, there's always going to be one person leaves it on. I expect that now. That's why you don't get angry. You see, it's a wonderful simile. So, when things go wrong, expect it. Lower your expectations. Then no anger, you can have fun. It doesn't spoil your day then. How many of you spoil your day? Something goes wrong. You say, that shouldn't have happened, but it does. You're not in tune, you haven't reconciled with real life. Real life is your husband forgets, you know, it's your anniversary today. You know, they forget, it's your birth, they forget to bring home the eggs, you know, from when they come home. They forget, that's the nature of men. So please lower your expectation. It's the nature of women as well. So then you can be at peace with life. It is forgiveness, it is a covering over the grass. It is a secret for a peaceful, happy life. And especially, it's a secret of a peaceful and happy meditation. You reconcile with this moment. Yeah, I'm tired because I've been working hard. Yeah, you're thinking a lot because that's what you've been doing all day. What do you expect? Just to click your fingers and then your mind will stop thinking? Now how about reconciling with your stupid mind? And that's, isn't it about time you realize you have got a stupid mind? All these weeks you've been meditating here, never been able to get anywhere. So reconcile, you know, this is who I am. I'm a stupid meditator. And if you can do that, then you learn what meditation is. You're at peace with yourself. You've reconciled. There's no more business. Then you stop thinking. Then you find peace. Then you find freedom. Do you get the point? This is the brilliance of Buddhism as I've understood it. You know, sometimes we have this thing called forgiveness, reconciliation, covering over with grass. We think that just is what we do for the past. It's not, it's what we do for the future as well, in the present. I just go more into the future because there's so many people who have anxiety and fear. And you know, there's lots to be afraid of and lots to be anxious of. But how about lowering our expectations about the future? To have a realistic idea of what this future is. Yeah, many things are going to go wrong in your life. You are going to get sick. Many people are going to die. There are going to be problems in life. So expect it. Lower your expectations. And then you can be free. I often tell people that if you get a phone call and you find, say, your auntie over in New York has just died, if you're a Buddhist, you should say, yes, I expected that. What do you mean she's just been hit by a truck? She's perfectly healthy. What do you mean you expected that? You say, I expect people to die at any time for any reason. That's just the nature of life. So please lower your expectations. When you have cancer, and you're just being diagnosed, the biopsy comes out, yes, there's a cancer there. Can you tell your oncologist, your doctor, thank you, doctor, I expected that. Can you? Can you lower your expectations and learn how to forgive the future, forgive your body for sometimes getting sick? If you can, you find you're so at peace, you know, with your body and mind. Now these sicknesses, they don't hardly affect you at all. So much of sickness is the body, but the worst part of the sickness is how you react to it, how your mind, you know, treats the, you know, the sicknesses, the old age of your body. If you can treat it with wisdom, you know, no, I don't expect to. No, I'm over 60 now. I don't expect to be able to behave like a 40-year-old or a 30-year-old. You know, I'm going to get tired. I'm going to forget things. And isn't it wonderful that as an old man, I demand my rights to forget. And I'm not going to feel guilty at all if I forgot that I told the same story last week. So please lower your expectations. You'll hear the same stories week after week because I'm an old monk, and the same jokes as well. So when we understand that, we're at peace with life. We reconcile. And this is actually the secret of peace of mind. We're at peace with the future. We're at peace with the past. And most importantly, we're at peace with this present moment. So we can really relax and enjoy. When we don't have any peace, when we're always fighting this moment like a master or mistress, looking at this moment like a slave, how can you ever have any rest? You'll always be apologizing for something, never being at peace. So please stop all this apologizing. Now you are who you are, and people have got to get used to it fast. Tell your partners, your children, your parents, lower your expectations. I'm me, this is who I am. And especially if it's your parents, you made me, so you're at blame. It's your genes, nothing to do with me. So that way that you can find peace in your life, it's reconciliation, it's forgiveness. And it doesn't just go in the ordinary way, it goes deep, 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 all the way to enlightenment. Forgive the moment, whatever it is. I'm not sure why it happens to be this way, it's just a result of cause and effect, old karma, here it is. This moment is already here. All I can do with it is to be at peace with this moment. And be kind, learn from this moment. But certainly I'm not going to be angry. I don't expect life to give me what it can never give me. And that means I can at last be at peace. There's called forgiveness in the three time zones. Whatever happened in the past, whatever might happen in the future, whatever happening now, I forgive. I'm at peace with. Lowered my expectations. And at last I feel reconciled. Thank you for listening. Okay, I've got some questions already. I saw it come up. So here you have some questions from all sorts of people. well, from Dundee, from Perth, and also from Prague. I'm always interested at where we get the questions from. If you don't know that these talks, they go out on the internet through many parts of the world, and you know, sometimes I give a talk, say at Brisbane or wherever I give talks, and people come up to me and say, I've been listening to you on the internet for years. Now I see you live. I can't believe it. So it's wonderful. The monks and nuns who teach here, they don't just teach in Perth, they teach for the whole world. And there's a huge number of people listening. But anyone, Michael from Dundee in Scotland, how does one reconcile oneself with someone who refuses to accept your forgiveness and or even recognize the wrong they have done? Okay. That's normal, isn't it? No one ever sort of recognizes the wrong they have done, no more than you recognize the wrong that you have done. So we always can recognize other people's wrong, but can you recognize your own wrong, your own faults? But what one can reconcile with is just that sometimes that the other person will never give you that forgiveness. But that doesn't mean you can't reconcile with them. Remember, forgiveness doesn't have to be a two-way street. It can be a one-way street somewhere. I forgive you. I'm going to let you go. Or let the past go. I'm going to be at peace. But I can't force you to do that. So at least you can reconcile with the fact that many people still hold on to their conceit. It is conceit that I'm right and you're wrong. That's a conceit. It's ego. It comes from a sense of self. The real truth is we're all wrong sometimes, we're all right sometimes. So just let it all go. This is just what a human being is. So, someone refuses to accept your forgiveness, you give your forgiveness. If they refuse to accept it, just leave it with them. You've given it, so don't take it back. And then you say, well, I've forgiven them. As far as I'm concerned, the past is over. The hurt is over. I don't want to sort of create anymore. I've reconciled with you. Whether you reconcile with me or not, that has to be your journey. So again, we have to do this in our own hearts first of all. We have reconciled with our past. No blaming, so we can cover it over with grass. And hopefully that encourages other people to as well. So yeah, sometimes, but first of all, don't even think or try and say who was right and who was wrong. That is what actually stops reconciliation happening. So again, you can't say right and wrong. That whole thing of attributing blame stops forgiveness and stops reconciliation. So that's why there's beautiful covering over with grass. You can maybe mention it to them. Great Buddha's teaching, cover it over with grass. Who did right, who did wrong? It's too far in the past to know. And so we'll always have an argument about that. But let's just put it aside. And don't even go there. You don't have to go there. You don't have to apportion blame. Because I don't even like that blame game at all. People are people. We all make mistakes. We're all human beings. So let it go. Lower your expectations. And then once you stop apportioning blame, then it's much easier to forgive. And of course, from that, reconcile. But in this case, you can do that, but the other person can't. Reconcile with that. Lower your expectations of what other people can do, but you do what you can do. My 20-year-old daughter and I have always been very close. A year ago, she found Christianity, Jehovah's Witnesses sect. She has since severed all ties with me simply because I am not one of them. What should I do so I could reconcile with her? Well, you could become a Jehovah's Witness. You can become a Buddhist mole. Infiltrate. Go undercover. Sorry, I told you I was a cheeky muck. I know some Christian friends have often told me that sometimes people go into these cults, the extremist cults, which cut themselves off from other people. But they don't usually last in those cults. I think sociologists who do research, these are the figures, not just the myths, but the truth of the situation, and they call those revolving door cults or sects. And I think the average is they stay there for about 2 years. And then what happens is that all the promises which these cults give them, they're going to be rich, happy, Jesus loves you, or somebody loves you, you're going to be happy ever after. After a couple of years, because these things don't deliver, they get disillusioned and they leave and they go elsewhere. So it's usually the case. The average, of course, some people stay there for much longer, even life, some people leave earlier. But the average is after a couple of years, people usually leave those sects, simply because, you know, it doesn't really deliver what they promise. So you can wait for a little while, and again, you can always reconcile with her, even though she can't reconcile with you. And when it's all over, don't go blaming one another. Now, when she comes out, you're there for her, and then you can just hug and reconcile. It's just like even that sometimes people get into the cult of drugs and other sort of addictions in this world. And during that time, it's like being in another sect. They're apart from you, and a bit crazy when they're into the drugs or the alcohol. But, you know, you just have to wait for them. Wait for the time when, you know, they come back to you, which they will. And then when, you know, they come back, don't be angry at them. Because a lot of times if you rejected them, got angry at them, tried to scold them or use even force when they've been going into, you know, the drugs or the alcohol, then they've got no one to go back to. No place where they can escape, no refuge they can hang on to when, you know, the promises of alcohol or drugs also fade away. And it promises you so much and they give you a big hit for the first time, but after a while, the promise of that lifestyle, it doesn't sort of, doesn't deliver. So people are looking for something else, and they look for the people they love the most. So please wait for your daughter. Please wait for a son or a daughter who's got heavily into drugs. When they come out, you're there for them, and you can be their refuge to reconcile and to love one another and move forward. But don't criticize or blame. Cover it over with grass. And George from Prague, it's another same question. How to get rid of anger towards a person who doesn't want your forgiveness? It's really strange that people, they don't respect forgiveness enough in this world. We're always into a blame and punishment type of society. I think that really comes from our Western education. Somebody does something wrong, we want them to be punished. And, you know, we just want them to be humiliated. And that's always thinking that I'm right and they're wrong. So please, if we can, make sure that people don't have the conceit that they're right and they're wrong. And it's okay to be wrong and don't fear being wrong. They can admit they're wrong. And that would also mean that they can allow for forgiveness as well. Because when I admit I've done wrong, I've made mistakes, I've made bad choices, when I can admit that, then I realize I would love some forgiveness and reconciliation. And when you can personalize it, then you get empathy for other people. When you know how you feel, then you can know how other people feel and realize they need that forgiveness as well. And if you can see more wonderful examples like what I saw last Tuesday of what happens when people forgive. And see, it's so beautiful, it's so wonderful that if a person doesn't want your forgiveness, at least they want the beauty of reconciliation, of making up of, you know, two people who have been enemies being friends again. It's such a beautiful thing to see. If we could see that more often, then I think maybe other people will be able to reconcile. On that, I remember last Wednesday, I mentioned an event, I should have mentioned that during the main part of my talk. For those of you my age or older, you may remember the Vietnam War, and there was one atrocity during that war called the My Lai Massacre, where a group of American soldiers, a large group, were ordered to go into a village in Vietnam to kill every man, woman or child. It was about 66 or 67, I forget what. But someone reminded me recently, 30 years after, the survivors of that massacre invited as many remaining soldiers from that unit to come and visit their village. And these were the people who had killed, you know, innocent people, their parents, their sisters, their uncles, their aunts, their grandparents. And these were the few who survived, who had actually got their life together again, had kids, got married. And they invited the soldiers who had done this terrible massacre back to their village to reconcile. And there was some documentary made about this. And it was beautiful seeing all these American soldiers being so surprised just how they were received with such hospitality, how they were hugged, looked after lavishly, given feasts. And these were the people who were responsible for the murder of so many of their relations and friends and loved ones. And to see that forgiveness, see that reconciliation, was something very moving. All those American soldiers apparently were crying, and they just could not believe that this village had invited them. This village had looked after them like the closest of relations, put on the best accommodation, the best food for these people. Examples like that should be more promoted in our world, should be seen by everybody, maybe in the schools, so that we never have a person who disrespects forgiveness that much that when it's asked for, they don't give it. Maybe that's my training as a Buddhist monk. I've been trained to value forgiveness so greatly. Doesn't matter what a person has done, if they ask forgiveness, I must always forgive them. Value that forgiveness much more than punishment, much more than blame, much more than trying to figure out who's right and who's wrong. Forgiveness is holy. It's part of love, it's part of beauty. It makes this world a great place and also a harmonious place. Until people do forgive one another like that, there'll always be wars and conflicts and arguments and separations and lack of love. Isn't it wonderful if people could reconcile, forgive, cover over with grass? And that's why, personally, I'm going on now. I really do not like sort of war crimes commissions. It's controversial. I think they should be covered over with grass. Please forgive one another. Put it aside. Become peaceful friends. Doesn't matter what the other side has done to you. The longer you carry it along, the more conflict there will be in the future. So that's forgiveness and reconciliation, even on a big scale. So I think when we promote forgiveness and its beauty more and more, I think then the people who don't give forgiveness or receive forgiveness will become less and less and less. I have a much more peaceful, happier place. So that's the best I can do for you, George, and it's also Michael, when someone doesn't want to accept your forgiveness. Of course, I know that a lot. After bhikkhuni ordination, there's still people who will refuse to meet me, even though I'm going to Thailand next week. They say, no, they're not ready to meet me yet. It's really a shame. But never mind. Sooner or later, people come to their senses. Anyway, any questions from the floor? Yeah. And that is loving kindness, joy. It's if you want to find this out, if you look on the internet, the Shambhala Project. There was some psychologists, sociologists, doctors. They invited a number of people for 6 months, to dedicate 6 months to this project. 3 months, half of them would meditate while the other people would do the cooking. And the other time, the other 3 months, the other people would do the meditation, the other people would do the looking after them. Because that way they had Now everyone had a chance at a 3 month retreat, but also they could actually look at the difference between those who did the 3 month retreat first and those who didn't. And one of the things they found out, which surprised them, they had all these amazing gizmos, like a hospital at the retreat center, and they found out that people who were meditating, the mitochondria in their DNA did not degrade. This is the cause of aging. Now every time the cell divides, these mitochondria, they call it fraying. And because they fray slightly every time they divide, after a while, that manifests as what we recognize as old age. And all these meditators, they found their mitochondria didn't degrade at all. They stayed exactly the same as when they began. So that's the secret of old age. You would never believe that I was 120, would you? You wouldn't, would you? Because it's not true. So that's it, just a meditation, happy life. And also not carrying around anger or guilt or fear. That wears out your face and every part, other part of your body. Is there a question over there? Yes. Yes, sir. Yes, you're saying that this is for the video because they can't hear you over there. Usually we have a person running around with a microphone, but they're not here today, but I forgive them for that. But it is true sometimes there's many things which are done wrong in this world, and we do feel we need to do something about it, to fight it. We have to be very careful there, because sometimes when we fight the wrongs in our world, whether it's companies or pollution or exploitation of people or the discrimination against parts of our society, that when we do fight against those things, sometimes we don't realize what the cause is. We're just fighting against the symptoms rather than the underlying cause. You know, what is the underlying cause of discrimination? Because people don't forgive a gay for being gay. They think that everybody should be heterosexual. You know, why do people just exploit our environment? You know, it's just because they can see that I'm not doing anything wrong. You guys are doing something wrong. This is what the world should be like. So a lot of times that if you can go to the root cause of the problem, then I think we can have a better world. People have been trying to fight the environment for years, and we're doing a pretty good job, but it's not that much progress has been made. Now, how many more Kyoto meetings do we have to have? It's not working. And then if you are an environmental activist and you fight, does that work? We feel we should be doing something, but you ask any of the people who have already been fighting, they get so frustrated. And so disappointed, they don't seem to be making enough headway. So that's why, as a Buddhist monk, I'm trying to go at a different angle. The human being, why do you want to do that in the first place? Where's the anger which comes from? You know, you want to go to war with another person just because you've got a different religion. Why can't you sort of forgive one another and reconcile? You don't need to be the same and find out who's right and who's wrong to reconcile. And if you just imagine if we could stop wars just by allowing people to reconcile with one another and allow people to have that forgiveness. Yes, you killed my brother, you shot him, but I forgive you. Just imagine just how much pollution will be solved. Just a war, one bomb. Huge amounts of pollution. I saw some of those images from Syria. Just whole neighborhoods, whole towns reduced to rubble. And I've built things before. I just know it takes such a long time to lay a brick. And just one stupid bomb destroys all of that. The amount of pain and sweat and hard work. And I can't understand that. So if people can learn some reconciliation, stop fighting each other, I think we can have a much better world. I'd go into another the cause of all that. It's a great question. It's still sort of an unfinished argument there. But I do suspect, and my intuition is, that we're going about these things in the wrong way. We should go to the root of them rather than just the symptoms of people not respecting one another and not respecting the planet they live on. Being angry at the planet and angry at people who are not the same as the same. Overcome that anger. Have reconciliation, being at peace with the people you live with. Being at peace with this earth. I think that might work. Other things aren't working, are they? To be honest. Anyway, that's a whole different talk. But thank you, I really respect that question. I don't think I've answered that. I don't think anyone can answer that properly. But I did my best. Any other comment or question before I finish off? Okay, one from Eddie to finish off with as usual. Go on, Eddie. Oh, you got one? Aha! You
see. Ajahn Brahm, thanks for this wonderful talk on forgiveness and reconciliation. Yeah. Yes. As I listened to your talk, you know, okay, my mind recalled, you know, not long ago, I read in the suttas, okay, it says, the Buddha says, okay, in the suttas, it says, oh bhikkhus, you know, if you can overcome greed, hatred, or anger and delusion, this is nibbana. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. So there's a lot of, and you know, I was thinking, geez, just greed, hatred, and delusion, you know, the nibbana, which is end of suffering, yeah. Peace.
Very good.
Yeah, and then that, you know, that involves the what I call reconciliation and forgiveness.
Indeed, yes.
Yeah.
Reconciliation means a lot. It's this sort of stopping of anger.
And considering nibbana is a process of letting go, no?
Indeed, yes, yeah, yeah. Exactly. I agree with you. Surprise, surprise. I reconcile with you. Very good. Okay. I think it's now time, it's 9 o'clock or 9:05. We can actually now pay respects to Buddha, Dhamma, and Sangha, those who wish to, and then we can go and have a cup of tea. And any other questions, you're most welcome to come up and ask them.
Arahan Sama Sambuddho Bhagava Buddhang Bhagavantang Abhivademi Suvakato Bhagavata Dhammo Dhammang Namassami Supatipanno Bhagavato Savaka Sango Sangang Namami.
Yeah, okay, very good.
What do you want the title to be, Adam?
Reconciliation.
What about reconciliation, forgiveness and reconciliation?
Yeah, that's long.
Okay, so you want reconciliation?
Yeah, reconciliation, yeah. Okay, you got it quickly?